Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Back Chat. Welcome to Yoga Berry, your yoga for scoliosis community. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry, for those of you that don't know me. So welcome if this is your first time here. And we've got a whole backlog of fantastic episodes. Sometimes it's just me talking about a specific topic about yoga or scoliosis or both. And sometimes I have interview guests like today, highly anticipated. And I am so, so happy that she is here. But before I bring her on, I just wanted to let you know, those of you who know that this has been around for a while, this little back chat that I do, it's coming up to nearly a year now. It's now available as a podcast as well. So you can find it on Spotify. You can find it on your Apple podcast app and most of the kind of main apps as well. So if you are one of those people who just prefer listening while you're doing something else, you're doing the dishes or doing the cooking or whatever else, then find it on there and subscribe, obviously. I would love for you to leave me a review because that would be really, really helpful. But if you are here live, it's 4 p.m. in the UK. It's 8 a.m. in California right now. And I can see a few of you joining in already. So we've got Laura from Buenos Aires. We've got Lorena Higgins from Norway. So everyone is coming in here right now. So those of you who are here live, feel free to get involved and ask us questions. I know there are quite a few of you today, so I can't promise that I can read every single one, but we will try. So let me introduce you to my guest for today. So it's the amazing Elise Browning Miller, and Elise is a senior certified Iyengar yoga teacher. She's been teaching since 1976, so a huge amount of experience. She is the author of this amazing book here. Oh, there we are. This is the front cover. And I always recommend this to my students. I always recommend this to anyone who deals with people that have scoliosis. It's such a great resource. So let me bring her on now. So there she is. Hi, Elise.
Hi, good morning. Or should I say good afternoon?
Good afternoon for me. Good morning for you. So I'm just checking again the chat, which you can't see at the moment. So I'm going to bring in here a few of those. So we've got Rosalind, who's from Manchester. Christina is saying hello. And then we've got someone from Serbia as well.
Wow.
Yeah. And someone from Napa, California. I took a class from Elise a decade ago and loved it, learned a lot. Thank you so much. Good. And yeah, I mean, this is very special for me personally as well, because it's kind of how my yoga for scoliosis journey started. Was pretty much nearly 15 years ago, I think, when a yoga teacher, so I went to a Ashtanga yoga class, and I really liked the fast practices at that time. And my teacher, and I always felt this kind of, something feels really imbalanced. I felt like one side of my body was just getting stronger and the other one was just not there, basically. And which is a problem if you're in a faster style of yoga, obviously. And my teacher at that time, she printed out an article, which was in the yoga journal. And it was your article, or one of your articles. I'm sure you've written many more since then. And it was quite a long one, and it was really detailed. And it just made the whole thing all of a sudden things clicked. It was like, ah, okay, this is how it works, and this is why things don't work the way that maybe they do for other people. So that's how I came across you. So thank you so much for writing this article.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wrote a couple for Yoga Journal, but the one I wrote in 1990, I don't know if that's the one you're speaking of. I wrote another one that was a little more detailed, but that's what launched me. It was unbelievable. We didn't have the internet, and Yoga Journal got hundreds of letters. Just please contact. I want to know more. Da, da, da. So I was like, okay, I guess this is what I'm going to be spending the rest of my life doing. I realized the interest, and it was my journey. So it's just a matter of sharing my journey, which was always wonderful to share that. Yeah.
And it was really great to see, because, you know, before you, nobody knew that this was a thing, first of all. And that how powerful it can be, and really the changes that we can experience. And obviously a lot of us, like, you know, yogis, even before we started to kind of modify our practice in any way, we know the benefits of yoga, right? We know what it can do. But even more so when you then start to get really specific, right,
it was very exciting for me, because I'd gone to graduate school in recreation therapy and took a lot of anatomy physiology courses with physical therapists. We were all in the same graduate program, and I started to research more of what was the physical therapy approach to scoliosis, because I was interested, you know, obviously because of my scoliosis. And then not long after, I met Iyengar. I was already involved with yoga, but he came to California when I had just moved there, and he was doing some of the same adjustments on me that actually were the same principles of physical therapy. So he had a very intuitive sense. He had also read a lot of anatomy books. He was really interested in physical conditions, different therapeutic conditions. So then it was putting my whole program together with the combination of that. But really, it was the same concept, which is, you know, obviously focusing on correcting the lateral aspect, the rotational, the breathing is so important. So
did he have a specific kind of interest and specific knowledge in this area? Or do you feel it was mainly that he was just overall such an amazing teacher that he kind of intuitively knew what to do?
I think it was a combination of both, but very intuitive. I mean, just unbelievably. I saw with many conditions that he addressed. So there was definitely that element. But also, he had a doctor in the early years who, when he started to see clients with different issues, everything from heart disease to, you know, physical conditions such as scoliosis, he also would rely on this person to explain the disease or the condition. And then he was reading anatomy books on top of that. So for him, it was, I feel, a combination. I remember us bringing Judith Lassiter, was friend. She brought over all these anatomy books one year that he had requested. So this was in the 80s.
Excellent. Right. Let me just see who else is here. Just saying hello to everyone. So Tatiana is saying good morning. We've got someone else from Ceron, is also in California.
Yeah.
And then Jane is in New York. Fantastic. Good. So I would like to know, and I'm waiting, if anyone obviously has questions for Elise, please do let us know. I'm really interested in your personal practice right now. So what does it look like? How long do you practice? What do you practice? Would you mind sharing that?
No, I'm happy to. Well, I wake up every morning. I was sharing with you earlier, swimming is very important in my life, particularly during the COVID-19. So I do get up and go for a swim. But sometimes before that, if I wake up early enough, I will do a downward dog or the three-part kitchen sink pull. And I always start my day with Adho Mukha Rikshasana, which is handstand, arm balance. It's my way of waking up. I know not everybody does that, but I'm just saying that's what I do. Uh-huh. And Panchamayurasana, I'm still doing that in my 70s. It just gets the energy going. And then I do a deeper practice. It depends upon my schedule. After I come back from swimming or in the afternoons, because I often have classes in the morning and privates always do my inversions usually in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really enjoying during this time of lockdown of getting more into pranayama. So I've had a practice for many years, but it seems like this is such an opportune time to focus on that. And I'm really understanding the importance of it. So that has also become part of my practice. So it varies, but I would say on the average, an hour. But, you know, I take workshops. Sometimes it's 2-3 hours. And, you know, there are days traveling or such where I'm always doing something. I always do something to lengthen my spine, make sure I'm breathing. But it can, you know, it can vary. And some days it's, you know, 15 minutes here, half hour here. So it can either be a longer one practice or it can be shorter. But I do I try to focus on the elements of what I teach people, which is breathing, lengthening the spine. I always seem to want to do at least a couple of standing poses. It just sets me on the earth better. Yeah. And, you know, always involve at least a twist and a little bit of back strengthening. And, you know, as I said, the restoratives, I feel with all the emotional fear that's going on and the breathing are really key right now in my life. And I feel in others too. So.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. All I want to do half of the time is just prone shavasana, lying on my belly and have my head down.
Yeah, and you know, actually, that's funny that you say that, but it's I think psychologically that's the pose that you want to start with. You know, it's like if you're feeling, it's hard to just automatically go into Supta Baddha Konasana, right? Mm-hmm. So that just surrender, bringing your breath to your back body, particularly with scoliosis. So I think it's a good one to start with. Then you emerge and open
yeah.
up.
Yes. Yeah. It really helps. Force.
Go yeah. ahead. Excuse me.
For me personally, it really helps to be inwards, first of all, correct. Just kind of right. staying like this. And then also I always feel like I start from this, especially if it's the end of the day, that there is so much kind of tightness and tension that I just mm-hmm. feel this position. It's just really nice mm-hmm. To open the back and yeah. to soften it.
So I will say that during this time, I have definitely been a little more forgiving with myself of not pushing, but more, as you say, going inward and really tuning in to what's appropriate. And it might be just basic poses for me. As a matter of fact, I would say, that's been more of my focus than trying to do advanced poses if it comes, you know, but I'm trying to tune in to what is appropriate for me mm-hmm. that day. That's what I really encourage everybody to do.
Yes.
Once they have a practice. Now I understand as a beginner, sometimes it's just good to have a routine. It just, you know, you don't have to think, you're just doing, you're covering the basics. You've got your practice. But as you become a little more intimate with your practice and yourself, I say sit for a few moments, find what is your intention? You know, what is your being needing, not just physically, but emotionally as well. And I think that's a really important thing to do, to take that time. You know, we start a yoga class with 3 Oms. That's centering. Well, whatever it be, a silent Om or just sitting, watching your breath and becoming clear. What is it that is my intention or that I need today.
So. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Would you mind, so you mentioned it a little bit, but would you mind taking us through those different elements of the of your approach to your yoga for scoliosis?
Okay, well, yeah, this came from my practice And it's in my book, the components that I feel are really important. So that consciousness of your breath, and again, that's tuning in. There it is. One of the things I ask, and this was something that BKS Iyengar did in the first workshop he did in California for me, which was just observe your breath. Notice where the breath is going, not trying to do breathing techniques, but be aware. So then you have a consciousness of where to send your breath. So that is a key. And of course, knowing scoliosis, your scoliosis is key. Because that's, you know, is it going to the right? Is it going to the left? Is it in the mid-back thoracic or is more in the lumbar? Or do you have both? You know, all the different patterns. It's important to know what you have. That's the key. Because then you can start, it starts to make sense. And you can then understand your breathing pattern, that you're breathing on one side where the curve is more than the concave side. So it's a really important aspect, the breathing. And then lengthening the spine. So that's key. There are many simple poses where you can do that. You don't have to be an advanced yogi to get that sense. And then there is the element of postural awareness, you know, and again, it's being aware, is one shoulder up higher than another? Are my hips shifted to one side? And the more you practice, the more you you see that as you were expressing. So that's important, Tadasana, mountain pose, and then that leads to standing poses. So the wonderful thing about standing poses is that it can be strengthening, even for the back, the legs, but also there's an element of flexibility. So it really addresses the whole body. So there's that lengthening, strengthening, and flexibility that can come from that. Then there is also just true strengthening back poses, some of the basic ones, again, beginners can do. And then again, learning which side feels weaker, you know, not just doing things unilaterally, but focusing on. So the more you tune in, the more you know, oh, I really need to. Shalabhasana is one of the basic ones. And we don't just do it with both arms lifting and both legs lifting. This is on your tummy for those who don't know, which is a classic way of doing it. But taking more of a physical therapy approach of lifting one arm and the opposite leg, that can isolate. So again, it's tuning into what is needed. Back strengtheners, and then twists, basic twists. I mean, I'm happy to talk more about that. But we use one that Iyengar taught for therapeutics, which is chair twist, chair Bharadvajasana, which is sitting in a chair. And why is that important? Because you want the natural curves of the spine rather than rounding. So sitting twists are not as optimal in the beginning. And then lastly,
there we are.
Yeah, there it is. Oh, thank you. Okay, so that's a twist everybody can do. And it's not so much a deep twist, but it's the fact of alignment, tapping in. You've got the feedback of your hands on the back of the chair, so you can really focus in more on adjusting to be more aligned. So that's a really important. And I say it's not always how advanced poses that are important to do, but your consciousness, your awareness in this. And if a pose is more complicated, it's harder to keep track with everything. Where it's a simple pose, then you can really be, the overused word, but mindful. You can be present. And then lastly, defying gravity, as I call it, which is getting into more traction poses, going into inversions. And those are often taught as a student gets more comfortable with yoga, a little more advanced. Though my teenagers want to do that right away.
Of course. Yeah. The rest is boring, right?
Right. We want. So, and I, you know, I approach with teenagers very differently than adults. Yeah. I get them excited about it. And yeah. So those are the principles to cover. And it's really to cover both strengthening and lengthening and flexibility, but also to address the components that make up scoliosis, the lateral aspect and the rotational aspect.
So I had a question actually before. So I asked in my Facebook group if anyone has got any questions for Elise. Mm-hmm. And one of them was about the twisting, which you mentioned, obviously, because I don't know if you remember, but about a year ago, I had an interview with one of the Schwarz physiotherapists, who's also a yoga teacher. But mm-hmm. she mm-hmm. was very much telling us to not twist at all. So even like small twists, she's like, no small twists, not even windshield wiper legs and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And back bends, no. Forward mm-hmm. bends, no. Side bends, mm-hmm. no. Mm-hmm.
what's left?
So what is your take on this?
Well, that is the Schwarz method, where even on their website, they say no back bends, they say no twists. It's their philosophy. I respect that. That's a physical therapy concept that they particularly have. It's not my experience, so I can only go with my experience. But it's also, for me, the mind consciousness is really the key. So if you're twisting, say, to the right, the first and foremost is get lengthening of the spine. So Iyengar, one of his last words when he was in his 90s to me, he said, "Now remember, with your scoliosis students, always have them lift their arms up first to get the lift of the torso, to get those natural curves in balance." So what does that mean? That means to not round your back. And I think that's the fear, because when you twist, your back is rounded. The lumbar is out of its natural concave curve. The discs are vulnerable. So you bend over, you round it, and you twist. That's how most people have injury to their lumbar. It's that combination. So absolutely, I agree with that. But what if you have those natural curves, the lumbar is in its natural state, then you can work with the musculature. So for me, when I twist to the right, I'm not trying to focus on actually the spine and the lumbar twisting. Mm-hmm. Actually, the vertebra, it doesn't. The lumbar vertebra are not designed. They are shaped so that they cannot. There's hardly any twisting. Mm-hmm. Roger Cole speaks of this, and he's a physiologist, PhD, and he talks about this, that there's very little twisting in the lumbar, but the musculature can move. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I turn just gently in the chair, I'm feeling that, oh, my left lumbar that goes back, I can bring it more in alignment. And I can even feel that I am bringing the right side, which the go forward, go back. So I'm getting more alignment there. Oh, I can use the back of the chair to push my right ribs in that laterally go out. Ah, I am creating more alignment. So I really look at twists, mm-hmm. and maybe I shouldn't even call them twists, but it's a sense of adjusting so that I'm more aligned. And just the opposite, when I go the other way to the left, twisting to the left, I'm focusing on bringing those back right ribs, because they want to go back forward, and the left ribs that in the front that want to jut forward back. So I feel it more of an alignment adjustment, and twists have that ability to particularly work with the rotation. But when you have hands on the back of a chair, it's like having the steering wheel in front mm-hmm. of you. You can direct and be subtle. And it's a subtle, you know, we talk about yoga, we move into poses, but really it's actions. What are action? Actions are where you're bringing your mind consciousness to a place and adjusting in a very subtle way, which might be a slight movement, but it's not yanking your body around. And I think the most important thing is that you don't fall into your curve. So it's very easy. And I think maybe that's from where they're coming from. Oh, if you just twist and you're unconscious, your back is just going to go the way it already is. But what if you bring your mind consciousness? This is the yoga philosophy, to bring mind consciousness there, to be subtle. And, you know, the Iyengar system is very much into that, of bringing subtlety I love to give this quote in my workshops. I'll give it to you. Iyengar once said, "You people, your body is in one piece. Your mind is in many pieces. My body is in many pieces. My mind is in one piece." So he's just basically saying, with the practice of yoga, I've refined so I can be stable in one area but move in another. So I can direct that consciousness there. So I feel that for twists. I feel that for back bends. Yeah, if I do back bends and I push into my concave side, yeah, well, what if I direct the movement forward in the thoracic spine on the convex side? I can't tell you how much better I feel after I've done back bends. Mm. You know, so I'm coming from my experience. I'm coming from that subtlety that I've learned from BKS Iyengar. And so I feel like I have had the opportunity to dive a little deeper to say, what is the way? What is the way that I can, rather than limiting myself to say, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. And that's my only regret, that I like to, that if the message is don't do anything, that's not going to help your scoliosis. So no. I think my message is, yes, there are things you can do. I want to empower students and those with scoliosis, not to say you can't do this, you can't do that. Now, there's some things that have a higher priority of what to do, for sure. So
yes, yeah, definitely. And I mean, you probably remember I called you after this interview I had, because I was like, oh no, does this mean, you know, I've been doing everything wrong, basically. But, you know, sometimes you get all this new information and then you have to adjust, you have to digest it. Right. So I needed a little bit of time as well to talk to people about it and then to feel it in my practice and then maybe understand why they say some of these things. And I've kind of made peace with it in a way that I think they are working very much with teenagers who are very flexible. A lot of them are hypermobile. You know, young girls, 14, 15 years old. Yes, twisting is probably not a priority, as you say. There might be other things that might be more of a priority. But if you get older, you don't move and you don't breathe well, right? You don't. Right. I feel like everything can get quite congested in the rib cage if I don't do a little bit of twisting. And then the other thing is also, I feel you learn so much in these movements, in a twist and in a back bend. I feel like there's so much learning going on with, oh, what does it feel like if I go this way? What does it feel like if I go this way? And same thing in a back bend. Oh, if I go a little bit higher, it actually doesn't feel good. So maybe there is something I need to derotate first and then I can backbend. So
And there's only one other thing I wanted to say about the twist, that Iyengar always had a phrase, you twist, that's he had the theory of squeeze, soak and spread, and I really like that. So you squeeze with the twist, then you allow. It's very important before and also after what you do after twist. So creating space, a simple example would be you do a gentle twist. And then maybe you do a downward dog, or you do hands on the wall, stretching and getting lengthening. So that place where you then breathe, let the blood circulate. When you squeeze anything, progressive relaxation, squeeze everything, you let it go. So it's the same idea. Then you take a few moments. And like you said, take a few moments to observe. You know, it's not just do poses, but it's okay, what is the effect of this when I twist this way? What is the effect? So taking that time also to create space afterwards, I think is particularly with people who are in pain or have tension. And sometimes it's unfolding what is kind of locked in. So when you start to do twists or stretch, you start to feel things that of unwinding, or you're more aware of where the tightness is or where the lack of space is. So all of that is self-discovery.
So Laura is asking, how is your experience with your spine as you are getting older? I have turned 65 And despite I practice yoga almost every day, that's my great fear. So, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm 72, 70, going on 73. And I have to practice. I mean, I feel like it really to help me to not get stiffer, tighter, or for my spine to increase. So a regular practice, I think, is really important, particularly after menopause. I recommend this for everyone because there is degeneration, you know, that can come with the disc and with, you know, implement it. Even if you have a idiopathic scoliosis, there can be other conditions that come in. And that's great that you practice almost every day, but just keep practicing. The more you practice, the less fear you will you will have. But it is, as you were saying earlier, as you're older, keep doing the practice. That's the key. My curve has still not gotten worse, but I do notice in my lower back that I really actually more addressing that area of my back, not all the time, but I feel that I do need to address that because I have also a condition called stenosis and some degenerative disc. Well, that's coming, but you know, I have a good hour of practice and the pain dissipates. So I know that as we get older, we can really still address our scoliosis.
To make a change, yeah. So with, you know, I told you before that I had this, I had a little bit of an interest to know what's happening in menopause, basically mm-hmm. planning ahead.
Yeah.
But, you know, you always get told that there's two times, there's pregnancy and menopause when things can get worse. Mm-hmm. So why is that? And what's your experience with this?
Okay. Well, I think really three times when you're teenager pregnancy. But of course, this is obviously for women and menopause, which, by the way, it's 8-1 women to men with a more moderate to severe scoliosis. So to address the menopause, definitely there are hormonal changes, as there are with pregnancy. The tissues are softer, hormonal changes. So with that, and plus, as I said, there can be degenerative disc issues. There can be arthritis, all of those conditions that can come with age, not necessarily just menopause. But I do see, and I will mention this, I do see a lot of students after menopause, and my understanding from them is that just with doing nothing for their scoliosis increases. And I think it's many reasons for it. The hormonal component, as I said, the degenerative disc, there can be arthritis that can set in. So even someone can have a scoliosis as an adult that they may not have had earlier on because of these other conditions that can occur. And of course, the softening of the tissue. So strengthening is a real key that I feel after menopause is a key element that really needs to be put into one's practice, not just flexibility. So that's a key. There can be, so what I really want to be clear on is sometimes it can be a mild scoliosis, idiopathic scoliosis, and you can progress all through your life doing fine. And then after menopause, then it can increase. But there's also, they've done research, it was in the New York Times, a study that showed that there was a huge increase for adults, I think it was over 60, with scoliosis. And that condition, they actually call degenerative scoliosis. You may not have had scoliosis earlier, but because of many conditions, weakening of the ligaments, soft tissue of the spine, abnormal bone spurs, you know, all of these different conditions, then that can create a scoliosis. So the practice of lengthening and strengthening and doing a practice every day can really make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Good. Let me just go through some of these questions here. So Tatiana was asking, she's saying she knows that yoga is best for scoliosis. Well, that's what we think, right?
we wouldn't be here.
No, exactly. Then she's asking, how about fitness? Or maybe, you know, are there other things? I mean, you mentioned swimming, obviously, already. Are there things that you are recommending?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to have cardiovascular conditioning, I mean, for everyone, whether you have scoliosis or not. So that is, and that's why I swim. You know, I was a swimmer in college, swam on the team. So it's something that comes naturally. For some people, they're not swimmers. So, you know, certainly there are other things. I find as I've gotten older, so speaking of getting older, I don't run anymore. As in my 20s or 30s, I ran. I found that compounding the spine, and I don't recommend that if you're older, but walking, hiking is all great. Cycling, even spinning, it's a circular action. So it's a great, and I do some of that. I used to do a lot of cycling in my 30s and 40s, doing 100 miles and, you know, that type of thing. So, but now I'm doing less of that, more of swimming. So yes, I believe in it.
Good. So she's asking, can I buy your book in Canada?
Yes, you may buy it anywhere. You can buy it from my website, which is more expensive to ship it to you. But I will say it's on Amazon. So what can I say?
Good. And then she's asking, what are your favorite poses for correcting scoliosis? Possibly.
Yeah, it says coercion. I don't know quite what. Maybe correcting, maybe you could correct
that
word.
That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
That she means.
Well, that could, I mean, again, those components, in all of those components of awareness of breathing, lengthening, you can be correcting your scoliosis. So there are two corrections that really come, the lateral and the rotational aspect. So, I feel that the simpler the poses, the better you have that opportunity to correct. First, it's observation of what's going on, knowing your curve, observation. And then I would say start with the lateral aspect of the scoliosis in the beginning. That's just the simplest way to feel, I would say, to feel the correction. But if there's a major rotational, that can start to be implemented. So while you're lengthening the spine, you can do a correction for sure. Standing poses, that's important to really know how to correct on each side, say if you're doing a lateral curve. So a little more complex, but I give good guidance in the book of what to do with each pattern. So the big key is to know which way your curve is going, right? Yes. You don't even have to know what it's titled, but you have to know, is my curve going to the right, in the mid back, or to the left? There are definitely four patterns that are more typical, but there are exceptions to that. So understanding that, and then the guidance can come from a teacher who specializes in scoliosis, or the book. I've tried to really be specific with what to do with different patterns. So
yes, absolutely. And as I said, I always recommend it because it's so clear, and you can have it next to you while you practice. You have the page open and then you can refer back to it, and you know, there's different cues for different curves, and then having this as a little bit of a guide. But what I heard the other day was apparently Ida Rolf used to say, put it where it belongs and then move it. And I really like this idea. So, and that's kind of what I'm hearing from you as well, that it doesn't really matter what exactly you practice, which poses, as long as you put things where they belong and then you take it into mm-hmm. a, yoga pose. Or
yes, absolutely. And it's not just doing the yoga pose. It's an awareness of when you're walking. Am I putting more weight in one leg? Is my hip shifting to one side more? Are my ribs poking out? Are my shoulders rounding? You know, just bringing the awareness that you get into yoga into your life. So I have to share something about Ida Rolf, because I was in my 20s Rolfed by a man named, David Hall, who was also a yoga teacher. His wife, Felicity Hall Green, was part of, we all started California Yoga Center, which is my center. And so he Rolfed me. And he's the one that mentally, he said something very similar to what Ida Rolf, of course, said, because he was a Rolfer. But he said, you can make a change. You know, you can correct your curve. So just that consciousness empowered me to the fact that, oh, I don't have to be stuck with this. And as the doctors often will say, oh, it's just going to get worse, a degree a year. No, I changed my consciousness to say, oh, there's something that I can do. I can then, you know, find where it is, be aware, and then move it, as that. So that was a really important, I think, step in my evolution with this, with how to approach my scoliosis, whether it's yoga or anything.
Yes, there's a few comments here on twisting. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying that twisting feels good in general. Christina is saying, I can feel the in the chair twist too after. I've been teaching it in my online course as well. There was a moment where I thought, oh, do I have to take out the twist?
Please don't.
This is important, because, you know, you have to be able to turn around and...
Right. It's life.
In your trial, right?
Hey, when I'm looking at my friend, am I bringing my back right ribs forward? Or am I letting my back do its thing? I mean, I think really what we're doing is being consciousness, so we don't fall into it getting worse, right? So
exactly. Oh, here's a question for you on Dr. Fishman. Always comes up.
Yes. Well, no, I appreciate his work. He studied with Iyengar even earlier than I met him. Early on, he has his own, methodology, of course, with how to approach scoliosis. But I absolutely agree with Vasistasana, or they call it side plank, is a wonderful way to address correcting the curve, strengthening the back, approaches it in a different way than on your tummy, some of the basic back strengtheners. So, I approach things a little differently just with my own experience, but, you know, I appreciate his research that he has done and his approach. And and the one thing I maybe appreciate a lot is that he keeps it really simple. Like, just do this pose, or just do two or three, you know. And in some ways, that's, I hope that, you know, the book has a lot of poses to do. So I hope if you get the book, you don't get overwhelmed. You know, stay with the basic things that really you feel are working for you. It might be for a year. All you're doing is trying to lengthen your spine, you know, and correct the lateral aspect. And then listening to your body. So I do appreciate that aspect, that I think, you know, one of the things I learned is I was so enthusiastic in the beginning with my students. And if I were working one-on-one, I would give a lot of things. And I realized early on that, no, keep it simple. Just give them three or four things. And, you know, Christine, in the practicum that I give for teachers, I say, give your students three poses to do every day that are most appropriate for them. And then also give them a sequence that, of course, covers more of the other components, but that they practice once a week, or maybe they practice more. So, yeah. So I appreciate those aspects from him. My approach is, you know, as everybody's, is a little different depending upon their own experience. But basically, we believe in yoga.
Absolutely. And, you know, it always depends on the perspective where people come from, right? As I was saying with Schross before,
yeah,
you know, this
absolutely.
Was mainly a method designed mainly for young people and correcting their scoliosis. And Dr. Fishman is a scientist. You know, he is a researcher. He wants to find out, and he wants to have scientific proof.
And I really appreciate that.
And we need it.
I mean, if I had the time, I've been attempting with some orthopedic surgeons to get some research going at UCSF and Stanford. And tell you the truth, I just haven't had the time or energy to go there. So I appreciate that he has been doing that.
Mm. Yes, a question about swimming for you. Is there anything to avoid at swimming, or just swim how it feels right at the moment? I think of swimming types, speed. I know the topic is yoga, but just wanted to ask about swimming.
Oh, no, it's a good question. I'm glad you're asking, because I do have, with everything, I have an opinion. Okay. Excuse me. So I do all strokes. I was trained as a swimmer. I was on a swim team, but I do highly recommend backstroke to implement in, because when you're doing freestyle, there is a tendency to go forward, which can round the back some. There are other benefits of that. Excuse me. So the pulling, when you're pulling, that's definitely going to strengthen your back. So here I am. I'm totally into my scoliosis. So what do? On the right side, I'm really pulling and drawing my intercostal muscles together because they're overstretched. And I actually find my right side, and sometimes harder to do that because they're overstretched. Mm-hmm. Okay. On the left side, because I have a right thoracic scoliosis, my left side, the intercostals are more compressed. I'm really reaching. So here I'm using my yoga consciousness, or my consciousness of my scoliosis, to improve that. So that would be for the freestyle. I find if my back is really stiff, the breaststroke is wonderful because it just releases tightness. But it's not particularly going to make my back strong. I mean, somewhat stronger, but the backstroke, because you're bringing your arm behind, you're opening your chest, you're actually really using those paraspinal muscles to be strengthened. So please put the backstroke in your practice, in your swimming.
Good. And then I hear we've got another question about, well, as you went into specifics of a curve, so Inspired to Wander is asking, I have a right thoracic left lumbar curve, so same as Elise as well. Would you please explain the rotation element for this double curve? My right lumbar area is convex and painful.
Well, I don't know if you're using the terminology correctly. Let me be clear. So if you have a right thoracic left lumbar, what does that mean? That's the convexity. Okay. So when they title a right thoracic, and this is just based on orthopedic surgeons' terminology, the right side is going back in the mid back. So that's spreading your ribs. And then it does an S shape. It's in the left side. That's your convex side where it's going back. So I'm not quite sure if you got your terminology wrong, or you have a right thoracolumbar, which means it's going to the right in the thoracic and also down into the lumbar. That would be convex for the right lumbar area, for the lumbar area. So so first, I want to be clear with that. But if you do have a right thoracic left lumbar, then how would you address the rotation? So the rotation is going back. That's the rotational component where it is spreading the ribs and literally becoming more convex or rounded on that side. So how would you correct that? You would want to decrease that rounding going back and bring that forward as you bring the concave side, that's the opposite side, to be less concave. So to bring it more back, and you just do the opposite for the left lumbar. If that's what you have with a left lumbar, if it's going back behind you. The muscles, by the way, get tight on that side. You're more compressed. The right ribs and the right waist compress and get closer to each other. So you would want to, what I coined the word derotate. You draw the left waist forward, the right waist back. And that would be just the opposite of what the tendency is. So that's, I hope I've clarified that.
Good. So I've got loads of questions here. So,
I'll try to be quick. So
you tell me how much time you've got, but okay. I know you've got a client. So
I have a client in 5 minutes. Well, no, I have a half hour. So I can.
Okay. So we'll take another couple of questions maybe. So Laura's asking, when you exercise with your back on the floor, do you put any supplement in your concave side? So I'm assuming she means if you're lying supine, and for example, you want to do things like the dipping the toes in the lake exercise or any
right, or supta padangusthasana hamstring.
Or supta padangusthasana,
yes, absolutely. If there is a rotational component and you feel when you lie down, either in the lumbar or the thoracic, or if it's a both on one side, the thoracic lumbar, you would want to fill in the concave side. Now, why is that? Not to push it more forward. So let me really be clear with this. It is to allow that your body is more balanced on the floor. Because if you let your back drop into the floor, you'll feel the ribs or whatever area is convex or the side of your curve. If you let go, you'll dip down into that concavity. You know, you're trying to feel your whole back on the floor. So you want to fill in to let the back then have some feedback on the floor so that you feel more balanced. Yeah. So that's the reason for it. And then you were mentioning going forward in child's pose, as it's known in English, or Anumukha Virasana or Balasana, that's another time where you would want to fill in from the front your concave side, whether or sides. Yeah.
So you see it more as filling in. So I was I've kind of adopted the Schroth approach of derotating. So kind of the opposite, which sometimes, so I use a little bit of both, I guess.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, now there's a whole nother thing that we do in restorative poses where you might use a brick or block, as we call it a brick, because Iyengar used to use bricks rather than blocks in the beginning. But you could use a brick or block to push that convex side in. Okay. So that's, to me, even though it's restorative, it's more active in actually adjusting and derotating like you would do with a twist. Yeah. So, but if you're really totally letting the back relax on the floor, even Shavasana, I mean, Shavasana is actually the most important pose to me, where you want to supplement that. And then restoratively, you still might be trying to do what you're saying, which is more the Schroth method, which is also our method. You know, when I do Shirshasana headstand, and I happen to do it, but with a brick or a block in my right thoracic to push it in against a wall. So that's an active way of adjusting. You know, if I'm doing a supportive Shirshasana. So that's, I work both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. But more of that's if you're trying to relax the back.
That's a difference, isn't it?
It's a difference. Yeah.
So Hege's saying, any thoughts about how to change the incline in my practice to go with the curve and making it even more curved? So I guess stopping progression of the curve is what she might mean. If I start thinking too much,
I'm gonna miss the yoga part.
That's a good point, isn't it?
That's a good point. Yeah. And Prashant Iyengar, who is BKS Iyengar's son, who's really focused on the breathing, and he says, adjust, adjust, and then settle in. So this is important that we don't want to lose the yoga part. So you do the best you can. Don't try to be perfect. Don't make it, you do the best you can and then you let go. So to me, this is really yoga. We call this dharana, dhyana. It's one of, the eight limbs leading to meditation. You want to give your concentration to do the best you can. Then you just experience the pose as you can, and then it quiets the mind and it really becomes more of a yoga practice. So yes, so we at one point, and I had an experience, I did a lot of meditation in my early years in the 20s, Buddhist meditation, yoga meditation, and I realized at some point in my meditation that all I was doing, I wasn't just watching my breath. I was adjusting this, adjusting that, just bringing my mind to this. I wasn't meditating. I was totally overwhelmed with just thinking about my scoliosis. So that was an important realization to adjust, then just settle into where you are.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Elise. How can people get in touch with you nowadays? Okay. I know your center is closed at the moment, but hopefully opening.
Well, let me just say, I have people from all over the world taking my classes since the Zoom. I have now teaching weekly a yoga for scoliosis class.
Brilliant.
California time, 4 to 5:30. It is recorded. So I have people from Europe, South Africa, taking that class. So you can take class. We have a whole series of Zoom classes, back care classes. So it's californiayoga.com is that website. And then there's my website, yogaforscoliosis.com, which gives more of workshops I'm giving. I'm still giving workshops all over the place. I'm just in my living room or my yoga studio. So that's what I'm doing. I'm Zooming a lot around. from my home.
Excellent. Good. And I did put all the links as well in the description. I did see there's Veronica just wanted to say hello here because she trained with you as well in London.
Yes.
So she's teaching students in Prague. So there, I think there are a few people who have obviously taking classes with you already, so you might want to have a look at the chat afterwards when you have some time. But yes, thank you so much, and I just wanted to tell people as well. So I did Elise's trainings, and then I did her practicum, and I was just saying to her before how valuable that really was, because it wasn't just a kind of a quick thing. It was a study over 6 months, so it was quite intense, and I absolutely learned so much during that time. And it's been very valuable. And I mean, I'm continuing obviously with what I do, but it's been really, really good for my personal learning, obviously as well. And yes, you've got on your website a whole directory as well, haven't you, of yoga teachers that...
Yes, so you can look there. And as I was sharing, we even have more who are not on my website. So you can always email me if you're in an area and you want to know of a teacher. I can't guarantee it, but we do have more.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Elise.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's quite a pleasure. It's always wonderful to talk about how to approach scoliosis.
Yes, lovely. Yeah, lovely. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.